and he was being beaten, and I was told to leave the area.
Okay, thank you very much. Before we turn these Marines opening for questions, they are seated in chronological order of when they were in Vietnam. Mr. Craig was in Vietnam in 66, and at the end, Mr. Eckert ends it with 1970. So we're trying to show that the policy that was carried out wasn't by one man when we first got there, wasn't by the next man when he got there, but it was standard operational procedure that was carried through from when we've been in Vietnam, and it's still going on now. These are not isolated incidents. It happens in the Army and in the Marine Corps. So I guess we could open up questions to the press or anybody who would have any questions.
While these acts...
Could you direct your question to somebody and identify yourself?
I'm Harvey Obshinsky from WAVX News, and I have a couple questions. First, were there any GIs or people in your battalions that objected to these kind of atrocities or made any effort to stop it when they saw them?
Is this a general question, just generally directed? Would anybody like to answer that? Mr. Camille?
When people first got there, they were pretty idealistic about what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. But the first time you see your buddies get killed, then that changes your mind. And the group pressure, like, if people wouldn't do things, you know, the group pressure, people would beat up other people, you know, and say, you either do it the way we do it or else you're going to get shot.
Did anyone actually ever stop an act of terrorism that you witnessed?
Only when the press was around, and that would usually be lieutenant colonels or majors.
How did they do that?
They would tell them that the press was there and not to do it, and that was it.
You described the ambush on the 24th of December, 1969. I'm not sure what you said it or not. What was the unit actually involved in that ambush?
That was India Company, 3rd Battalion. First Marines.
And was it ever established who the people who were ambushed were? Where they came from?
Not to my knowledge.
Was asking if it was ever established who the people who were ambushed were, where they came from.
Maybe if the best could repeat the question through their mic.
All right. The question was in reference to the breaking of the Christmas truce, December 24th, 1968. Excuse me, 1969. And the follow-up question on that was it ever determined whether or not or who these people were who were ambushed? Even though an ambush is an aggressive act.
Excuse me, would that be in reference to, like, fragging that's been in the newspapers lately where they throw hand grenades at their own officers and staff NCOs?
The question was if some sort of bounty was put on men that were inadequate in the field. And what it basically surrounded in, what I was familiar to, was newer personnel coming in country and taking the place of somebody that was more experienced in the field, and maybe causing, like, unnecessary deaths in the field or something like this. And the men felt that, like, if they put a little money together, somebody would have the guts to wound them or something, so they'd be drawn out of the outfit.
Have you ever actually witnessed that happen?
Yes, I have.
Any of you gentlemen here on the panel, do you, could you relate any incidences of fragging that you either heard of, saw? Anybody on it? Mr. Campbell.
In January of 1969, northeast of Anwa, a couple of miles northeast of Anwa, in the Arizona Territory. My unit was temporarily assigned to Operation Taylor Common. And we moved out, we waited until dark, and moved out in a very heavily very heavily booby-trapped area. The lead platoon hit a booby trap, and the word was passed back that it was the platoon commander that hit it. And then the CO went up to check to see how the platoon commander was, and there was another explosion. And the initial word came back that the CO hit a booby trap. Now, from the first blast, the first booby trap that was hit, the platoon commander's radio man was also hit. Now, he went to the hospital and was back to the unit about 2 weeks later. And he told me and several other people, about two or three other people privately, that the second booby trap was not a booby trap, that one of the men from the platoon that the commander that hit the first booby trap, fragged the company commander because he was very upset about the platoon commander hitting the booby trap. He was upset about the CO waiting till dark to move out. He thought it was a stupid move and figured that got his platoon commander, and the men in that platoon were pretty tight with that platoon commander. So I didn't witness, I witnessed the explosion, I witnessed the flash, but it was dark. I couldn't see the guy throw the grenade. I didn't know that he threw it until the company radio, or the platoon radio man, explained this to me.
Well, Mr. Banger, you said you had an incident of this.
Yeah,
speak into the microphone, please, Joe.
Our unit, I guess the majority of us had been in country for about 9 or 10 months. And then this new guy came. New guy was a lifer, and a lifer was in charge of the mail. Well, he stopped the mail for about 3 days because he wanted his troops to shine their shoes or something, or clean up or shave or get a haircut. And he stopped the mail, so someone told him that we don't get mail by noon on a specific day, before midnight that night, you're going to be offed. But since he was hard and he was in the Korean War, and he thought that what happened in the old Marine Corps is happening in Vietnam, he persisted and the mail wasn't gotten out. And before midnight, he was fragged. And the mail did come through the next day.
Thank you.
We can't hear you, please.
We will repeat the question.
The first is, could you direct, after I get through showing your hands or something, would you gentlemen be willing to sign statements under oath if it comes to that, if you are requested to, that what you say did happen? Secondly, I wonder if I could just bring a piece of paper up and have it passed along, because it's going to be hard to get to you later, and have each of you put your Army serial numbers, Social Security number, or something like that on here.
Let the gentleman finish, please.
Mike Oliver will attest to this. We have been checking all week, and we found you guys have been very much in order, but the Pentagon tells us they've got to have the number before they can go to the record center in St. Louis and verify that you have been in the military. We've got to do it their way if we're going to check that. If we find... Right. Okay, good. You understand, if we find one...
The question was, could we have a quiet, please, so everyone can hear the question? The question, or the remark, was made of the credibility of these Marines will be questioned. And he would like to know if the Marines who have testified would sign a statement to testify to what they have seen, a written statement verifying this. And the other one is if we could pass a piece of paper where you would all sign your serial numbers and what unit you were in and what service, so they could have it verified that you were in the service. There's one thing, all of these men right here have their DD-214s, which is given to men who are released from active duty, and on this DD-214 it has their years of service in Vietnam and some of the medals they were awarded. I think that's sufficient. Okay, would you, by a show of...
Just a little bit further on that. After the gentleman come down here, all the information will be made available. The press will be allowed to look at their copies of the DD-214s, which is a release from active duty. And as Scott said, proof that they were in Vietnam in the Marine Corps with the 1st Marine Division.
All right, I'd like to, about this signing this paper thing, I want to know myself, and I imagine a lot of people, are we going to be given statements signed by personnel from the Pentagon, chiefs of staff, stating that these things, that they say that these did not happen? I mean, are we going to be given the same treatment? I mean, if they're going to call us liars, they're going to have to prove it.
This signing of statements will be left up to the individual Marines, as this is an individual testimony. So we have no power over that. You'll have to contact the individual Marine whose testimony you are particularly interested in and see if he will sign. Most of these guys will sign.
I'm not an emissary of the Pentagon. I have no plans to ask people to sign statements or anything. This was a question I was asked by my manager, and I apologize if you draw any unfair inference from it.
No, I'm just saying that if your editor was given information from the Pentagon saying that they wanted us to sign these, well.
It was a general question directed. The Free Press has checked out everybody who either has testified now or will be testifying. They're not. It's not a hostile type witness.
Oh, I'm worried.
Okay.
I was wondering if the Free Press would be willing to give the GIs the assurance that their signed statements will not be used as evidence against them in court.
These statements can't be used against them. Our lawyers have told us that these men cannot be prosecuted for participating in this.
Yeah, but should the United States Congress pass a law extending the liability or placing war crimes under civil courts as has been proposed in
comes under being tried for something. Right.
Would not be ex post facto. You could still be prosecuted. You know, so you have to make sure that the Detroit Free Press is not going to be, in effect, holding signed confessions.
No, this is absurd. If you do something that's not illegal, and then next week or next year a law is passed making it illegal, you cannot be prosecuted for this.
These things are already illegal. The question, the only thing that's protecting them is the...
Excuse me. I don't think we should, you know, go any further into this subject right now due to a lack of time.
Are you afraid to?
Since the question has been raised, we do appreciate the help that the Free Press has given us in corroborating the background of the men. A lot of you probably read in the Detroit News that Michael Hunter, who appeared at our press conference yesterday, that the Army has no record of him. We have here from the Department of the Army his discharge, a certificate of appreciation for faithful performance of duty. From the U.S. Army Office of the Adjutant General, Dear Sergeant Hunter, Upon your release from active duty, you were transferred to the U.S. Army Reserve and offered to help with any of his problems, a form letter. So, we have this on everybody. The names, serial numbers, background will be made available on all witnesses. And we do appreciate the question. Thanks.
One was, is rape and kind of sexual brutality to women, brutality involving the vagina in particular, is that a usual feature of people torn Vietnam? Anybody that could answer that. Also, in your training...
Can we have one question at a time, because we're going to have to repeat them,
okay.
All right, go ahead. The question was brutality to women, and in particular reference... to the vagina, was this a usual practice? Simpson, you wish to answer?
Me, myself, I think it's pretty usual over there. Of course, you'll be out in the bush and you meet some lickies.
Could you speak into the mic a little bit?
Meet women out on the trails and everything else. And Marines over there, and just like the Army and the Navy, are human. But they just don't go about it the right way. They might stick a rifle in a woman's head and just say, take your clothes off. That's the way it's done over there. Of course, they're not treated as human beings over there. Treated as dirt.
Also, another question was, in your training, is anything ever said about women in particular? Is there anything like, you know, besides just being goofed, you know, are you encouraged to rape women in any way or to think of them in any particular way?
The question was, in reference to your training, before you went to Nam, in your basic training, was there anything ever mentioned about the treatment of women?
Yes, in ITR, in the Marine Corps, you go through infantry training regiment. They have a class on when you interrogate a POW or a villager, what to look for, where they hide things. And they stress over and over again that a woman has more available places to hide things like maps or anything than a male. So we covered about 20 minutes on where to search for objects for a male suspect and about an hour on a female, because it was like everyone was getting into it pretty heavy, like, you know, wishful thinking, you know. But it seems to me that the philosophy over there is like, somehow or another, we're more afraid of females than we were of males, because I don't know why, but the female was always like, you never knew where you stood, so you went overboard in your job with her in all your daily actions. You doubled whatever you would do for a male, because like we always heard these stories, like the fiercest fighters were like the females over there. And, you know, we didn't want to be embarrassed by getting our asses kicked by a bunch of females. So that's about it.
I mean, does that mean that women were treated especially brutally? You said double everything.
Yes, I would say so. Because it makes a lasting impression on some guy, some zip that's watching his daughter worked over. So we have a better opportunity to keep him in line by working her over.
Mr. Banger, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I think in regards to women in Vietnam, first of all, you get this feeling sometimes when you're over there that you don't even think of their sex sometimes. This is really disgusting. You don't even think of them as human beings. They're gooks. And they're objects. They're not human. They're objects. The general rule was a Vietnamese who is dead is a confirmed Viet Cong. And one who is living is Viet Cong suspect. And that's the way it was. Down to this specific instance, I talked about the disembowelment of the woman. I think the person involved was a freaked out sexist and a, you know, if that's what you're trying to get at. I think maybe he probably had problems, yeah. He had to be. He was in the Army for 20 years. Yeah.
Can we have any other reporters' questions? Guy in the back there, glasses.
Wondering, you were talking about the mutilation of bodies and, in general, murder. And I was wondering, what did you do, or how did they get rid of these mutilated bodies? A good murderer always, gets rid of his body.
Ken Campbell?
Take the question.
The question was in reference to mutilated bodies. How were they gotten rid of?
Okay, a particular way that... the people I was with got rid of bodies on Operation Mead River in November of 68. There were some mutilated bodies. The engineers blew them with C4. They put 40 pounds of C4 underneath the body and blew them. This was done for kicks, not just to dispose of them, but for kicks, to watch them go up. Another thing I wasn't given a chance to make this clear earlier, and I'd like to make that clear now. When we were showing the policies changing from within the same unit, changing like from when Scott Camille was there to when I was there a few months later, I mentioned the fact that things cooled down after the incidents that he explained, but they picked up again about 3 or 4 months later, and then came the blowing away of vills and mutilation of bodies and stuff. All the incidents that I described earlier.
Yeah.
Could you stand
back
up, please?
Yes.
The question. I'm Mary McClendon, president of the Household Workers Organization, and I want to ask a question in general. Was there any discrimination between the white soldiers and the black soldiers in the service? White soldiers supposed to be superior to the black soldiers? I mean, did they tell you anything about that over here before you went over there? Or was it put into practice anyway, over there? Or did they mention any of that before you went over there?
All right. The question was in reference to any racism practiced per se within the unit itself, blacks and whites. Was anything ever done in training? We can go into that very briefly now. This afternoon, after the 3rd Marine Division is going to be speaking, there will be a panel of veterans who will delve into this a little bit more deeply. Would anybody care to go into this briefly now?
I went to boot camp at Paris Island, and we had a lot of brothers from Philly there, and the common term used in discussing the brothers amongst the DIs, the drill instructors, well, they were niggers. It was, come here, nigger, do this, nigger. And I think this had a carryover effect throughout the entire training. It always seemed to be that the brothers were always looked down upon.
Okay, as I said before, we will be going a little bit more deeply into this later on this afternoon. Are there any more questions in this? I'm back to... could you identify yourself, please?
Bill Weaver, Tom Sheehan came out with a criticism of Mark Lane's book, saying that there was gross inaccuracies, and Mark Lane said that Mr. Sheehan should have reported some of the things that he had seen. I just wondered if there was any correspondence or any newsmen or any of the media that was present during these brutalities that these men know of, and just ignored reporting anything.
The question was in reference to, were there any news media people present
WBAI in New York
when any of this testimony occurred? It was in reference to Mr. Lane's book, The Gross Inaccuracies of the Press There in Vietnam. Can anybody report any actual instances where the press either didn't report or didn't report accurately what happened? Mr. Bangert.
I testified to the fact of the bodies outside of Quang Tri City. Sometimes people from the press would drive through there, specifically some sometimes they would have, not getting into a sexist bag, but sometimes there was women journalists who were readily welcomed into the unit. There was always this whitewashing thing. Well, they sometimes these people go right through the bodies, but right past the bodies, and come into our base to get a story. They were kept away from the enlisted men. They were kept away from the people who were involved, the press in general. And the typical thing was take them down to the O Club, get them soused, get them in a flight suit, and take them out and fly them around through Quang Tri Province. And if they wanted to, they could see what it's like to shoot a gun. That happened a couple times when I was there.
Mr. Hansen.
My impression that I get, any of you gentlemen can answer, but it doesn't sound like to me that even if the newsman could have gotten to you, that any of you would have been willing to talk about these things at that time. Is that true?
That's very true.
The question was, even if anybody, or even if the news media had been present during these atrocities, the people, any of you guys up here, would have talked about these to the press. And we have an announcement.
On Tuesday, when the 25th Division gives their testimony, there's former PR men from MACV down who will talk about the civilian press at length. So these questions will be answered then.
Incident I was talking about when they were marking to see who could throw the gooks the farther was done on the ground because it's hard to mark them from 3,000 feet. However, it was an official policy. After every mission you fly, you have to fill out an after mission report to show them all the good stuff you did during the day, like how many pounds of rice you carried and how many Americans and how many gooks you carried. Well, we were given very specific oral orders from the colonel on down. When you're carrying VCS, Viet Cong suspects, you don't count them when they get in the airplane. You count them when they get out of the airplane because the numbers don't always jive. And if one of them happens to get scared of heights and decides to get out or something like that, or if he looks like maybe he's going to try and raise some shit in the belly of the aircraft and the crewman has to kick him out, that's none of your business. That didn't really happen because you counted the men when they got off.
Did you ever witness anyone being thrown from the helicopter in the air?
I'm a pilot, and they're below you and behind you, and you can't see.
Was there anybody who witnessed?
In regard to that question, another method they use in regard to helicopters is sometimes when they capture three suspected enemy people, They might take them for a joyride. They usually tie them up and put a blindfold on them, and they'll put maybe three guys in a C-53, and they'll fly off, and they'll ask the guys in the air, you know, what is your unit and all this jive, and if they don't cooperate, they just might take one of them and say, okay, take off the blindfolds to the other two dudes and just shove them right out. Now, this is like, I don't know if this gives us a psychological edge, because apparently it works, because when the other two guys come down to the ground, I mean, they're scared shitless and they cooperate more readily than they ever would before.
Mr. Camille, you had some actual instances of observations of Vietnamese being thrown out of helicopters.
On Operation Stone, I was on the ground and I didn't see that this Vietnamese was pushed out, but I did see him come flying out and land over where we were.
Perhaps he decided to take a little walk or something. I have an announcement. The 1st Air Cav and the 3rd Marines, 3rd Marine Division, would you meet in the vets room for a conference? After this is over, please. And more questions? The question was directed to Mr. Bishop in reference to the killing of the four NVA nurses.
Well, I didn't get into this in the testimony, but it's written on my testimony. The operation was Mead River. It was a very large-scale operation. ROC Marines were involved, who were Korean Marines. Marines were involved, the Army was involved, and Arvins were involved. A cordon was set up outside of Da Nang, and a big squeeze was put on right outside the airport. There were quite a few body counts as far as the enemy went. It was something like 1,300. There was quite a few American, the Allies had something like 700 or 800 so-called dead. We never knew, but